Hello, gentlemen. Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right. I'll have our clerk call our second case on our 10:30 docket.
The court will now call the City of the Colony versus Mark and Kim Bryant. And may it please the court, Mr. Paul Peters is arguing for the appellants, and Mr. M. Jermaine Watson is arguing for the appellants.
Counsel?
Please, the court, Mr. Watson. This is an appeal from the denial of a plea to the jurisdiction filed by the city, and it's the city's position that the evidence relevant to the issue of subject matter jurisdiction are undisputed, or the evidence establishes that the issues are undisputed. There is no fact issue on the jurisdictional issue other than the city's plea should be granted. This is a sewer backup case. We've exhaustively briefed many of the issues, but by way of background, there is a 15-inch water main that runs down Heron Cove, and the sewer is gravity flow. There's no machinery involved. And it flows in a generally northeasterly direction past the plaintiff's house. The issues arose on this particular case. It was back on April 4th, 2014. And no one's contending the city caused the backup. It's not an issue in the case. But they got a call from a person that lived on Heron Cove that sewer was backing up. They got that call about 7:15, 7:20. The city provides 24-hour service for these type things. The head of the department that handles these type matters was notified. An individual named Marco Chavez was sent out to the scene, and all he knew at that point was that water was backing out of a backup at a residence on Heron Cove. He goes out, he comes down the street called Avocet, and he sees a manhole in Heron Cove, and sewage is percolating out of that. So he knows that, in their parlance, that manhole is wet, that it has sewage in it, to the extent, because these are buried way underground and the main flows through the bottom of the manhole. He knows he needs to go down the roadway. He's familiar with the area. He goes to the next manhole. He sees that water is percolating out of that. When I say water, I'm talking about sewage. He also engages two women that were in the front yard, tells them what he's there for. And he takes his pick, takes the pick off, and sees water that's a wet manhole. So he knows, and in the way the city deals with these situations, and they find the wet manholes, and they go looking for a dry manhole. And if they find a wet manhole, they find a dry manhole, they know any blockage in the main between those two manholes. Mr. Chavez, because he is familiar with this area, knew that the next downstream manhole was, I believe it was southwest of Holden Circle in an unimproved area. He went over there, but because of debris that was around the manhole, he couldn't get to it and open it. So he calls back, and he knows at that point they're going to need to have what they call a vac truck come out there because there's obviously a blockage in the main. He left the city yard about 7:30. He gets out there, drives over there. He does all what I've just told you about. And then he goes back to the other manhole. The vac truck is dispatched. The vac truck was operated by an individual named Mr. Willis. And in the plaintiff's brief, their reply brief, they state that Mr. Willis got on the scene at 8 o'clock. The way this vac truck operates, and under Texas Civil Protection and Remedies Code 101 6.021, 1A and B. The city's immunity from suit has been waived to the limited extent that the plaintiff's claims arise out of the use or operation of motor vehicle or motor-driven equipment, and the employees could be held liable under Texas law. The way, there's no dispute in this case that the vac truck is, in fact, a type of motor-driven equipment. It has a reel with a hose on it, and you attach a nozzle to the lead hose, and you put it in the manhole, and it sends pressurized water upstream toward the wet manhole in hopes of encountering the blockage and breaking through it. And then when it breaks through it, the sewage rushes downstream. Well, he did that, and the blockage he ran into is approximately 15 to 20 feet, would have been upstream, and the sewage is flowing downstream. And the blockage serves like a dam. It backs up sewage. Sewage can't get by it, and it's backing up toward the residences. Now, it's important to keep in mind that the residence of the plaintiffs in this particular case was 141 yards, and my math is not good, but it's 423 feet upstream from where the blockage was. The blockage, when it hits, or when the nozzle, and the nozzle works like a jet ski, water goes out the back and propels it forward. It doesn't send water upstream. It's propelled, water going out the back, upstream. It hits the blockage. It didn't break through at that point. He pulls the hose back, lets it go. It breaks through, and immediately the dam's broken. The water comes rushing down and flows away from the residences. And there, the water in the manholes started to recede at that point. And it's the city's
Council Pierce, can you identify the time that the nozzle penetrated the blockage and released the blockage in the sewer line?
Your Honor, I can't give you an exact time, but what I can tell you is that the plaintiff's attorney has indicated, and he refers to Mr. Willis, and it's undisputed that Mr. Willis is the one that operated the hose, that he arrived at the location near Holden Circle at approximately 8 a.m. And once he arrived, the following steps would have to be taken before, he would actually activate
it. He had to locate the vac truck, and he had to get the hose off the vac truck, whatever it's stored on there, and he had to add the nozzle to the hose if it wasn't already on it, and then place it in the sewer line itself, so that it could go upstream, uphill to the blockage and release that blockage so that things could flow downhill.
Right, and I don't know exactly how long that was, but I would imagine it would be, several minutes. And when you look at the timing, you have a resident calling at 7:15. You have Mr. Chavez leaving the yard at about 7:20 or 7:30. You have Mr. Willis arriving there with a truck at 8. And you have the plaintiff saying that when she returned to her she noticed some problems with the commode not flushing properly or some drainage problems in the shower. When she returned to her home at 7:30, by her own admission, that would have been before Mr. Willis got there.
The reason I ask you about the time, counsel.
And She noticed that the flooding in her home was getting much worse. So her home was flooding before the city ever used a vac truck, according to the evidence that we introduced in connection with the plea to jurisdiction. And you have to couple that with the fact, or that with the fact, Your Honor, that two things. One, when the vac truck, the nozzle, hits the blockage, it's not pushing any water upstream. It's going downstream because sewage flows downhill. And the vac truck's immediately turned off, pulled out. The water's rushing away from not only the plaintiff's residence, but all the other residents that are upstream. And the plaintiff's residence, like I said, is 423 feet upstream. It's our position that the use of that truck did not cause the property damage that the plaintiff seeks to recover, so there hasn't been a waiver of our immunity in this case. The plaintiff has also raised an issue of, we failed to warn people on the street that we were going to use a vac truck. Well, the plaintiff already knew that there was, you know, sewage backing up in her home before we ever got there. It's my position, in a nutshell, that a failure to warn is not a use or operation of a motor vehicle. Plus, she had sewage backing up in her home, which was getting worse from when she had left her home earlier. You know, when you're the city, you're on the horns of a dilemma. People are getting more and more sewage in their home, and I think we can all agree you don't want that to happen. So do the city workers not go and try to relieve the blockage? They go talk to everyone on that street. Say, hey, we're going to clear the blockage, which I'm sure everyone would say, go ahead and do it. And why are you wasting time? But be that as it may, it's the city's position that a failure to warn is not use or operation of a motor vehicle, and the plaintiff cited no case that it was. The plaintiff did state in his brief in a wholly conclusory manner that the damage to the residence was caused at the exact time the sewer line was cleared, but the evidence, the jurisdictional evidence, and their own admission establishes that sewage had backed up in her to her home before Mr. Willis got there. I mean, Mr. Willis didn't get there, according to the plaintiff, until 8, and when he got there, it would have taken some minutes to get everything hooked up and break through the blockage. So our position, and again, not to belabor the point, but and I want to return my time to you, because our position is straightforward. The property damage was not caused by use or operation of motor vehicle, and therefore the court erred when it didn't grant our plea to the jurisdiction.
Counsel, what about the discussion in the briefs, yours and the plaintiff's brief, about the sewer outlets, that in terms of the height of the outlet in the residence of the plaintiffs, and how that might have had an effect on the flow of the sewage?
Your Honor, as I understand, and as an attorney, you learn things about topics that you wouldn't think you'd ever learn about. But these homes have, on Heron Cove, have sewer clean outs or backups. This was the only home, to my knowledge, and I believe there's nothing in the record to the contrary, but it's the only home that had flooding damage like this. And one of our workers, when he was going, noticed that unlike the other backups, which are generally located at or about ground level, because again, sewage flows downhill, Now the main, there's a service that flows downhill, and you want the sewage to be at a point where to flow into the yard before going into the house. At this particular residence, he observed that the backup at the residence was approximately 18 inches tall. And sewage, when it flows downhill, it looks for the lowest place to go. And if it has to rise up a foot and a half, it's going to go into the house and go up through the commode, through the showers, out of sinks. And that's what happened in this case. And that's my explanation of that, Your Honor.
Thank you.
But I would return my time to you, but that's our position.
May it please the court, Mr. Pierce, justices. Our position is the failure of the city to not only warn the residents of Heron Cove caused this, but the actual operation of the vehicle itself caused this. What was left out by Mr. Pierce in his presentation was the fact that there is evidence in the record that indicates that my client did notice that there was a problem with her sewage that morning. She left, she came back, and between 7:30 and 8 o'clock, it started getting worse. And then around the time when the line was cleared, around 8 o'clock, which is when Mr. Willis said he arrived, her home was flooded with sewage. And what is not present in the brief, but is present in the actual testimony of my client in the record, is that it started gushing out around the time that the line was cleared. There is conflicting testimony by Mr. Willis himself and other city employees as to the severity of the situation when they arrive. For example, you have Mr. Chavez, who was cited by Mr. Pierce as indicating that there was sewage when he drove on the Heron Cove Drive, which is where the Appalese residence is located. There's sewage coming out of the street manholes. Well, as a city employee, no one had arrived at that time. He had phoned the city dispatch to have the Vector truck come out. Why wouldn't he take an opportunity beyond addressing the two ladies he claimed he contacted on the street? Hey, you know, as you probably already know, there's a severe problem here. He never made an attempt to go by the Harper's residence to contact
whether he did that or not. Where is the specific, explicit waiver of immunity that would allow you to pursue that claim? Because failure to warn has nothing to do with a motor-driven vehicle. You have to have an explicit, specific waiver.
Yes. It is in conjunction with the operation of a motor vehicle, and that he knew that there was going to be a Vector truck needed to clear the line. And
there has to be causation. Their failure to warn didn't cause the sewage to come into her house.
I'll get to that, Your Honor. What happened when, my understanding of the evidence and in the record, is what happened when the sewer line was cleared. All the sewage that had been backing up the entire time rushed to not only plaintiff's home, but other residents on Heron Cove. And when that sewage was released, it couldn't escape my client's escape valve, the clean out. That clean out was installed under the precursors or the recommendations of the city. When those homes were built, the city had to send an inspector around to approve that clean out. And whether it's too low or too high, I mean, it was under city code.
Is that in the record?
Yes, Your Honor. So our argument is, not only did the failure to warn initially that we're about to clear this line when he had an opportunity to do so, and we're going to bring in a truck to do it. There's also a failure to warn after the fact, because as the crew was coming up the street and cleaning out the sewage from the clean outs that it spilled out into the gutters, one of the residents noted that, hey guys, what did he say? He said something to the effect of, hey gentlemen, you need to go out and warn these other people, because I saw it coming and I opened mine, but there's some people that had their homes flooded. And around that time, as they were walking up the street, that's when my client stepped outside in her boots and indicated that her house had been totally flooded. And we believe there is a nexus between the identification of the sewer backup and the severity of it, and a subsequent use of the truck, knowing that the sewage would find its natural course and flow out of the cleanouts or into people's homes. They had an opportunity to let them know that.
What were they going to do if you let them know? What could a person do if they were given knowledge that this, you're talking about getting things up off the floor, putting them up higher in the house, just like you would in a flooding situation? I mean, the warning that you're talking about, I don't see how it fits into the presentation of your case that the sewage overflowed in your client's home. And do you dispute that you claim that the sewage that went in the house was caused by pressure from the truck in putting its hose and nozzle in the sewer line to do a breakup of the whatever blockage was there?
Your Honor, our argument was in that particular, as to those particular facts, that is inconclusive based on evidence in the record, that this was a motion for summary judgment and this is an interlocutory appeal. Neither side had the opportunity to develop that evidence any further. And the only testimony we have is from the city's employees, and some of that is conflicting as to what actually did occur. We have testimony from an employee that indicates that he didn't see the water move, but then he contradicted himself later on during his deposition testimony. So at this point, we don't really know. They say they cleared the blockage and the water gushed down, but we don't really know at this point.
Do we know that the sewage in this line was flowing downhill?
That is the testimony of the city's employees.
Well, do you dispute that? Did you have any evidence in any affidavit or summary judgment evidence presented that said the sewage in this sewer line flows uphill?
We don't. We don't, Your
Thank
Honor.
You.
We don't. But with that said, Judge, if the flooding was as severe as Mr. Chavez said it was when he first arrived on the scene, there is nothing to indicate that that couldn't be the case. If it's backed all the way up and my client's house is right in the perfect place, why couldn't that be possible?
But even if the backup before the motor-driven vehicle even enters the picture here, if the backup caused the flooding in your client's house, where's your waiver of immunity for that?
Your Honor, we didn't make that argument, but to address your hypothetical, our position is that the sewage was backing up on the entire street. It was backing up into her toilet and to the tub, but at the time the line was cleared, it started gushing out to the point where it couldn't be contained and she couldn't do anything except try to mitigate what she could.
So it's not your position. I thought you just said it was your position that you had a claim that it was just backing up, and it was the backup, at least, that was part of your damages as well.
No, Your Honor. I believe that's what Mr. Pierce provided in his presentation. His argument was this backup started to occur before we arrived, so we're not liable because the damage was caused by that. We're saying, yes, the sewage started to back up in the toilet from the very, you know, as soon as Mr. Rigg got up and went to work, but it got progressively worse. And I've never experienced this problem. I hope I never do, Your Honor. But there's a difference between a toilet not flushing and some sewage seeping into your shower. And that occurred on that street to other neighbors. But there's a distinction between that and the sewage gushing out of the shower and the toilet around the time that either the sewage was pushed up or it was released going downhill. Either way, it was caused by the truck, and that's where I think the nexus is.
Okay.
And that's that's really our position.
Counsel, can you get a mental picture for me? I can't get a mental picture in my mind of the sewer outlet on your client's home being 18 inches higher than the other sewer line. I mean, wasn't this outlet in the ground? I'm talking about in the ground level of the yard in the house.
Yes, Your Honor. It's actually, the cleanout was closer to the front door of their house. I believe it was on the right side where it's usually installed. And I believe that the city has claimed that it sits higher above ground. And for some reason, that caused more sewage to seep up into the house.
Well, I'm trying to get a picture in my mind of how that outlet would look if I'm standing on the front porch of your client's house. Do I see something out there in the yard that's 18 inches above ground?
Well, no, Your Honor, you see it. It's right there by the porch, near the porch, so you may be able to see it from the street. But we dispute that it was as high as Mr. Hollis, I believe, is the individual who testified in his transcript.
What does it look like?
It's a tube that just sticks out of the ground near the porch. And what it's used for is, you know, when sewage backs up or there's a backup in the house, it's supposed to open up and spill out. And that's how it operates. And I'll note that the city is not required to, but in these instances, it has gone through and opened cleanouts prior to running a vector truck because they're familiar with these issues, or should be. That didn't occur here either.
Does it take a physical opening for this outlet to work?
That is not the way it's engineered to work, Your Honor.
That's right. It works from the pressure coming into the tube from somewhere in terms of sewage water. In other words, the sewage water, when it backs up, is going to activate the physical aspect of the outlet tube. The tube is there so that when there's pressure in the sewer line, that the sewer comes up in the tube and in the yard as opposed to going in the house.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, to make it less severe, yes.
That's the theory,
yes,
of the outlet. And this outlet, for some reason, didn't do that. We didn't have the sewage outlet having the sewer water flow through the outlet into the yard as opposed to going into the house?
Yes, Your Honor. That's what, that made it worse, but that didn't cause it.
I understand your argument.
That made it worse, Your Honor, but didn't cause it. There's testimony, well, unsworn testimony, but there's a statement provided by one of the neighbors who indicated that he'd had this problem before, and he opened his, and it flowed onto the street. And I'll note that the Harpers, when they contacted the city, they indicated that it was just kind of shooting out of their clean out that morning when the city arrived, and said it was noticeable and it was flooding their yard. These are still facts that, were this not for an interlocutory appeal, would have been developed at trial. And I have just as many questions as the justices have in this matter, because it hasn't been fully resolved. And I believe that was what the trial judge was doing here. He was saying, well, there's some conflicting testimony here. There is no establish causation by either side as to what happened here, because we're telling two distinctly different stories as to, you know, representations of what happened. And for that reason, he denied their plea to jurisdiction on their motion for summary judgment. Thank you, Justices.
Thank you.
Do you have any additional questions?
Questions?
Thank you, Counsel.
I will be as brief as possible. I think it's telling, the last comment that was made, that the plaintiff himself admitted there's nothing in the record on causation. From his point of view, he has the burden to show a waiver of our immunity. That is his burden. A plea to jurisdiction lets cities bring the issue of subject matter jurisdiction up before they expend all the money necessary to go to summary judgment or to go to a trial. It allows them to bring the issue up early. He has the burden.
But don't we apply a summary judgment standard of review in a plea to the jurisdiction as far as factual issues? So don't we view all the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-movement? And if someone's saying at the time that the hose was broke through the blockage, the nozzle broke through the blockage, there was a gushing of sewage that had previously just been containable and bubbling up in sinks and bathtubs and showers, don't we have to view that in the light most favorable to the non-movement?
Your Honor,
as far as causation?
The plaintiff in their own brief, and I would say ordinarily, but in their own brief, they say Mr. Willis did not get there till 8 o'clock. That's what they briefed. And I would think they're not going to put something into the record before this court that's incorrect. So now they have different allegations, but they themselves have said to this court in their brief that Mr. Willis got there at 8 o'clock, and it was getting worse between 7:30 and 8. And if he got there at 8 o'clock, we know it took a while for him to get everything unloaded and do the work. Additionally, Mr. Watson said, and there's no evidence at all in the record of this, that water went upstream after the jet truck was used. All the evidence to the contrary. The nozzle doesn't project water upstream. It broke through the dam. Everything started falling or flowing downstream in a rush away from these homes.
But he says that there's evidence that at the time that this blockage was broke, it broke through the blockage, that there was gushing at the other end of this. Whether there's water projected upstream or not, if you had enough blockage and you broke through it with this projectile thing that you use, it could cause at the other end stuff to fly out, could it not?
I don't think so. I think what possibly could happen, because look at this in the time scene, there's no telling when this blockage formed. We don't know that. No one knows that. Well,
but we know it was leaking out into people's yards already.
At 7:15.
And another 45 minutes on top of that, you got more in there.
That's right. So before the blockage ever stopped, there's a bunch dammed up behind it. We know that, I would think. You break through it, there's still going to be sewage dammed up behind her home, or the plaintiff's home is 400 and some feet away. That's not going to alleviate itself like that. There's still sewage flowing downstream from above her residence. It's not going to all immediately flow out where we both broke through.
But if there's a fact question, sufficient evidence in there for a fact question, then the court can decide there's a fact question and deny the plea to the jurisdiction. Do you agree?
I agree the court could do that, but I don't think there's a fact question.
Okay.
One issue was raised about the inspection. That is not in any pleadings. It hasn't been in any pleadings. Under 101-021-0215A, and I forget the subsection, inspections are considered to be governmental functions of a city. And, pardon me, and the fact that some city employee, and this may not seem fair, but I believe it's a law, I didn't brief it because it wasn't an issue. Some government employee doesn't do their job right and enforce the code, doesn't waive a municipal corporation's immunity. And the only way I know it, I had a case years and years ago when J. Roe Fair was on the bench in Dallas, tells you how long ago that was, where a person issued a permit for a guy to open up a dance hall. And then he went out, incurred all the expense that goes along with that, and someone said, wait a minute, the zoning doesn't support that. And the city prevailed in that suit because there hadn't been any waiver of its immunity for the building inspector.
Counsel, your time has expired.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Pierce. Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Watson.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming before us and arguing today. Your case is submitted, and our clerk will adjourn court.
All right. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the Second District of Texas now stands adjourned. It is adjourned.